Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Pro Wrestling Interviews. We got a great show. We've had a great couple weeks of wrestling and a lot to talk about. And our guest commentators tonight, first of all, from the outer reaches of Pro Wrestling Interviews, Indianapolis, Indiana, the one and only Todd Saxon. How are you doing tonight, Todd?
Outstanding, supernatural, and ecstatic to be here. Man, there's so much odds and ends to catch up on.
That's right. Well, you are pretty supernatural, and we're glad to have you here for sure. And we've got our buddy Tony from Richmond, Virginia. How are you doing tonight, Tony?
I'm great. Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. I know it's been a couple of weeks since I've been on the show. You know, I've been busy. I just finished a show myself on the Addams Family. Like, and yes, I do musical theater. But, yeah, like, I am excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. And our pro host tonight, the one and only Stellar Steven, Steve Logan from Richmond, Virginia. How are you doing tonight, Steve?
I'm doing great.
We're glad to have you here. Yep, and I wanted to start this show off with a personal comment, because I have been watching wrestling since I was probably 10 years old. My ultimate hero got in the ring last weekend, Ric Flair. I don't care what anybody says as a personal comment. It was a throwback. It was wonderful to see him in there. He got to bleed. Ric Flair got to show everybody that he is still the man in the ring. And everybody can tear me up, but it was just wonderful. It sent chills up and down my spine watching him and just knowing his dedication to this incredible world of professional wrestling. That man is dedicated, and he has brought a lot of happiness to folks that have met him at shows, met him at Comic-Cons, met him everywhere, and watched him in the ring, including me. So that is Dr. John's opening take on the world of professional wrestling. The gods of wrestling, I believe, were smiling. Bruno Sammartino, the great Ivan Koloff, I believe everybody was smiling from up above because they were excited that Ric Flair had to do it one more time. Steve, I'm going to turn the show over to you, and everybody can yell at me if they want to, but it was great.
I say Carl Gotch is probably laughing at that comment. I think Carl Gotch would have been a fan of Davey Boy Smith Jr.'s Killer Cross, even though it was only 5 minutes. But I'll get into the card. Obviously, that was one of the big events of SummerSlam weekend. I would definitely want to go over the whole card a little bit. And, it was very interesting card on paper. And obviously, the main event, I think most people were looking forward to seeing what Flair can do, especially given he was 73. But the pre-show matches that started before the event were Ren Narita versus Uemura from New Japan. Ren Narita got the win. Not surprised Narita won. Not too familiar with Yuya, but Ren got the win 5 minutes, 30 seconds in the singles match. And then there was a Bunkhouse Battle Royale on the pre-show. And it was obviously like previous Bunkhouse Battle Royales. Winner got like a boot trophy and a buckle. And obviously a tribute to Dusty Rhodes, I believe. And lots of GCW talent in there. I was really glad to see Crowbar from WCW. Yeah, he used to tag team. I used to be a duo with David Flair in WCW in later years, and I think Crowbar has been very underrated. I was kind of disappointed that he got eliminated by Effie from GCW, but it is what it is. lots of great talent in that match. You had Sim Bodie, who was actually one of the producers for that show, too, listed in the credits later on, which was pretty cool. And then got talents like Bubba Ray Dudley and others. But, yeah, Mance Warner eliminated Bully Ray to win that Battle Royale in 11 minutes. Also, Nick Gage had his own entrance, too. Not everybody in the match got their own entrances, but I believe Nick Gage was, like, one of the last guys to come out there. But, yeah, I think it was – I was hoping Crowbar would win, but Mance Warner made sense to me. And then he obviously showed up on Rampage. We had to see that match, but I'm sure him and Moxley was a good match. But – anyways, the first match on the show, the Ric Flair's last match, was Motor City Machine Guns, Alex Shelley, Chris Sabin, versus the Wolves, Davey Richards, and Eddie Edwards. And the Motor City Machine Guns won in 10 minutes, 50 seconds. Definitely a good tag team matchup on paper, so glad to see that opened. Match I was most looking forward to was Killer Cross versus Davey Boy Smith, and kind of disappointed it was only 5 minutes. I wish they got 10 or 15, but for what it was pretty good. Scarlett Bordeaux was also there, valeting for Cross as usual. And then pretty cool that not too long after this appearance, he has his return to WWE. And he's attacking Drew McIntyre on SmackDown, so pretty good week for Cross, you know, being on a card, headlining Ric Flair, and then showing up on SmackDown, attacking the number one contender to Roman Reigns, pretty big deal. Also, he's back to an NXT Killer Cross, Karrion Cross persona, and has Scarlett with the time dial, the sand clock. It was pretty cool. And then the fifth match on this Ric Flair's last match show was Jonathan Gresham versus Allen Angels, Takeshita, and Nick Wayne. It was a four corners match to determine the number one contender for the Progress World Championship, and that's from the UK. Not surprised Gresham got the win, but pretty cool to see Takeshita get a moment. That match also went 5 minutes, but some good talent in that match. And Nick Wayne's only 17 years old. I believe he's going to be signed to AEW if he isn't already when he's old enough, so it's pretty interesting seeing him here. And then match after that, sixth match, was a tag team match. It was the Four Horsemen, Brian Pillman Jr., Brock Anderson, with Brock Anderson's dad, Arn Anderson, managing, and they were going against Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton, and Kerry Morton, who's Ricky Morton's son, and Robert Gibson was ringside managing them, and yeah, Pillman Jr. and Brock Anderson got the one by pin, and 7 minutes, 40 seconds. Pretty cool to see Rock and Roll Express on this card. And also Pillman Jr. and Anderson ripping the Horsemen. I've met Pillman Jr. in Indiana years ago. It's pretty cool. Sometimes it work in Virginia, too. So the match on this card was Ray Phoenix versus Bandido, Laredo Kid, and Black Taurus. In a four-way match, this was probably one of the most exciting matches on the card, given this Lucha Libre focused. Not surprised that Rey Fénix got the win. But yeah, it was great seeing some Lucha on the card, and not too familiar with Laredo Kid and Black Taurus, but it was good to see them as well as Bandido and Fénix. I think Fénix is the closest you'll get to Rey Mysterio in his prime, for sure. And then eighth match on the card was a singles match with Impact World title. It was Josh Alexander versus Jacob Fatu. Definitely good on paper, but obviously ended in no contest because there was a run-in with Matt Cardona and I believe formerly Kurt Hawkins and Brian Myers. And I believe it led to a diamond cutter from DDP to Matt Cardona, so that was pretty cool, getting a DDP moment on the card. And I think it was a good match. I was kind of impressed with Fatu, given how big he is, the way he's moving around in there. Hopefully they'll meet up again at some point, but it was kind of cool seeing Fatu from MLW challenging the Impact World Champion. Last match on the card was the Briscoes, Jay Briscoe, Mark Briscoe, defeating the Von Erichs, Marshall Von Erich, Ross Von Erich, who are Kevin Von Erich's sons. And, yeah, Briscoe's got the win, 7 minutes, 45 seconds. Pretty cool seeing Von Erichs on the Jim Crocker promotion. So I forgot to mention that earlier. This card was under the name of Jim Crocker Promotions, too, so you got to see Tony Schiavone doing commentary with David Crockett throughout most of the show. So, yeah, pretty cool having that nostalgia. 10th match in the cards, semi-main, was a three-way match with Impact Knockouts World Championship or the Impact Women's World Championship. Jordan Grace, who's the champion, defeated Perrazzo on the L-Ring by submission. I was kind of surprised how early Rachel Irwin got hurt. She got rolled up by Jordan Grace, and like her foot seemed to get injured just doing the roll up, but it was unintentional. But she was able to continue later on. But yeah, that was 9 minutes and 5 seconds, and then obviously the main event: Ric Flair and his son-in-law Andrade El Idolo faced Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett with Karen Jarrett ringside. Went 27 minutes, and Ric Flair got the win over Jeff Jarrett with the he had him in the figure four, but I think they counted as a pinfall there. It was I didn't expect a lot from Ric, given his age. Everybody said he was good in the training videos. It seemed like he was, to me and other people, that he was kind of gassed out at some point. But I think the psychology of the match was great. I think Jeff Jarrett really carried that match, and he was kind of like the heat magnet. Even when he came out to the ring, he was just, it looked like fans wanted to jump to the rail. And it's funny because Jeff Jarrett's from, from Nashville, from Tennessee, and he was getting a lot of heat there. And his dad, Jerry Jarrett, was there too, who he used to promote in Memphis for years, Memphis, Tennessee. So that was pretty neat seeing him, Jerry Jarrett, and Jerry Lawler backstage earlier in the night. And during the backstage interview, and Jerry Lawler was classic heel Lawler, and rooting for Jarrett, who's from Tennessee as well, and they're saying that Ric Flair took the strap from Jackie Fargo, which I thought that was pretty neat. Who's obviously Jerry Lawler's hero is Jackie Fargo. Yeah, a lot of drama, a lot of in the build-up and in the match as well. They had Karen Jarrett get attacked by Conrad's wife, Megan, daughter of Flair. That was pretty crazy. There was one point where Rick was busted open with Karen's shoe, I believe, that Jeff busted him open with. And kind of similar to what they did in the parking lot and the build-up to the. I was hoping maybe Lethal to get the win, but given it's the whole show is about Ric Flair, it just made sense for him to get the win, obviously. So. Sorry.
Well, this is Dr. John, and I guess what you can say is, if Flair was having it a little bit rough, you know, he was under the most pressure of any human being ever. You know, this
exactly.
is the last match for one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, and he's 73 years old, and we're just lucky that he came back one more time. We really are. And, you know, I don't care. You know, it's like we don't care. This was a great match. This was a one-of-a-kind match. It will be referenced from now until the end of time. So, you know, again, thanks, Ric Flair. Thanks, everybody that participated. And it was great seeing him shake the hands of Mick Foley, Undertaker, all those guys who were there. Bret Hart was there. I mean, everybody was there,
right.
And it was just incredible.
It
so,
was,
you know, just...
Yep.
Historically, it was wonderful. Todd, I wanted to ask you, because you're another guy that's been around the world, been around wrestling for quite a while. What do you think, because you are our supernatural guy?
First off, I mean, if anybody didn't base their expectations on somebody that's a little long in the tooth, then you're a muggle at best. But, you know, they got out there, had some of the old school storytelling stuff, and they made sure when they were doing the match, when they had the youthful folks that could take the full 200% bumps going on at, you know, full speed, moving 110 miles an hour, it was happening. But they had those elements of the old storytelling. I mean, think about this. Flair spent a long portion of his career where they were 40-minute matches, 45-minute matches, hour-long matches, best two out of three, things like that. And he still got out there. It's not like he just walked in once and, you know, either got pinned or got the pin or anything like there. He took the bump. He gave, you know, the chops didn't have the heat to it, the zing that he used to have. Well, not exactly gonna. I ain't saying I don't know a lot of people willing to go volunteer to go stand and take one of his chops today. But it was, and like one of the things Steve touched on, man, Jeff Jarrett, the old hometown guy, and he went out there and he ate that heat up. I mean, just adding to the ambiance of the match, right? I mean, how he just... He ate that stuff up, and it just, you could tell that fed to the energy. There was some energy there, man. Good grief, there was some energy.
You're 100% right, Todd. Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
I think even though the night was about Rick, it really made Jeff Jarrett proven even more that he's kind of had a legacy. He's been in the Hall of Fame before, WWE Hall of Fame, and just the fact that he's been booked so many places in recent years, AAA, GCW, Jim Crockett Promotions recently, WWE, he was also the referee for the tag team match on SummerSlam with the Usos and Street Profits. I think it's really amazing how I think Jeff Jarrett kind of gets taken for granted. He was kind of like that Triple H reign of terror for TNA at one point in the early years, but I'd say he's definitely earned legacy status at this point, given that he's one of Ric Flair's last opponents. And I forgot to mention some of the moments in the match. Conrad who is Ric Flair's son-in-law, was kind of watching ringside. He was the promoter at this event, but he was there to watch it up close. Andrade caught some knuckles from Conrad and was able to give him the Flair to put on his right hand, and Flair knocked out Jarrett with those knucks, the silver knucks, and but Mike Chioda was unconscious, the original referee of the match, so before Rick could get the pin, another referee had to come out. So that made sense why Jeff was able to get pinned, because he got knocked out with his knucks. So I think it was good psychology of the match. I think it could have been shorter, given just the pressure and endurance on Rick to go through it, but a lot of it was obviously carried through Jared and Lethal, and Andrade was pretty good too, but I don't know. I don't think you can really compare this match between, you know, as the last match, comparing this one to Shawn Michaels. The Shawn Michaels match was obviously better. Who wants to remember him taking a double pin on Jeff Jarrett over Shawn Michaels saying, "I'm sorry, I love you," and then super kicking Ric Flair at WrestleMania? Like, that was the bigger moment. It's just, it's hard to compare, but at least Ric Flair went out in a way that he wanted, and the undercard definitely benefited from it. So those are kind of my final thoughts, but I wanted to get Tony to chime in, because I talked to him before the show and he did see it. So Tony, your thoughts on this card and Ric Flair's last match in general?
Man, well, first of all, watching this whole show almost made me emotional, because, like, you see, like, all these, like, legends, Hall of Famers, and
right,
and some, like, you know, second-generation superstars who are representing pro wrestling today. Like when you think about this, if you think about both Marshall and Ross Von Erich, who is the son of Kevin Von Erich and the nephew of the late David and Karen Von Erich, who was, like, the greatest tag team of all time. And mm-hmm. you see, like, Brock representing his father, Arn Anderson. And you see Brian Pillman Jr. representing his late father, Brian Pillman. And, man, it was just absolutely amazing. And I mean, during the time, like, I was hoping to maybe see Charlotte get involved in this, but I don't know, like, how that works with
right.
WWE, since she signed with WWE. But either way, like, this was an amazing show. I was, like, really excited. I would definitely give it, like, a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I think the car was good on paper, and also I love the nostalgia of it, given that it was Jim Crockett Promotions. You had Bob Cottle, like, videos, and I like the credits after the event finished. I wanted to mention some of the post-match stuff. Ric Flair cut a promo or had an interview with Tony Schiavone after, and there were some good pictures of them together years, decades ago, and Jim Clark Promotions years ago. So it's pretty neat seeing those two together, Tony and Flair. And, yeah, it was kind of bizarre, but surreal, like, seeing those two together up there all that time, but also just Flair, he mentioned the match at Steamboat, obviously, being a big moment for him. I believe that was in 89, and I believe they had a match in Nashville, why he was mentioning it, And then yeah, it was just really interesting to see these legends there ringside, like John was mentioning, Tager, Brett, and Mick, and showed Mick a lot during the pre-show. And yeah, it was the weirdest thing for me was like just seeing how much press Kid Rock got this whole weekend, because he was there at SummerSlam. He kind of went viral because he was kissing some big girl next to him. And then, like, Ric Flair, his last post-match interview, he's talking to Kid Rock before he leaves. He's like, Rick was talking about the pressure of the night being that, like, Kid Rock was saying that, I have the night off, why don't you entertain me, like, and Rick was like, no shit. And, that was just one of the most surreal parts for me. It's like, Rick's just talking about this entertainer Kid Rock over here, and then, like, Andrade's coming out to make his entrance, and, like, they're just showing Kid Rock during the entrance. I'm just trying to watch Andrade walk out here, but it's just funny. And then, when Rick was leaving, the talent were out there to kind of clap and congratulate Rick for having his last match. And then Rick had the big gold belt with him and Andrade holding it up. And then right before the feed cut off, you had like Jay Lethal getting a hug with Ric Flair before they rolled the credits. And it was pretty cool seeing some credits in pro wrestling. You don't see that often these days. And
right.
So yeah, I wanted to mention that too while we're on, you know, still talking about it. Yeah, that was, I would say, a good show on paper. Tony, you were going to say something?
Yes. And let us just say, what about that moment when Ric Flair came out with the original WCW World Heavyweight Championship? Now, that
right.
was, like, that was absolutely amazing, because, like, he could that represent talent as a 16-time world champion. Like, no one has ever beaten that at all. So I was really, like, excited to see that belt.
Oh, sure. I believe it may have been Conrad who owned it and had Rick wear it to the ring. Yeah, it was also I wanted to mention, because Rick's past health issues, I believe he was wearing a shirt. It was a purple shirt with the rhinestones on it. It looked pretty good. And then obviously had the white robe, too. It was kind of like reminded me of WCW 2000 a little bit, but I think because Rick had the shirt then, but like Rick's shirt on that match, the last match, it looked pretty good on him, like given the rhinestones in the back. It wasn't just a regular WCW t-shirt. Todd, you were going to say something?
No, I was just saying, you referenced the shirt looking good. It did. It was, man, I don't know. There was so much throwback in there and on that. And since we do kind of have a quick momentary tangent, we're right near the top of the hour, well within the 5-minute window before
right.
or after. And so, Dr.
Yes,
John, you know what you get to do right now.
I got to do something important. We want to say thank you to WLSC AM and FM Loris Conway, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the home of Banana Jack in the Morning, and Banana Jack and Marshall Biddle from 10 to noon on Small Town Big Talk, where I am a guest every Friday morning at 11:30. So thanks a lot to this great radio station for carrying us. And back to you, Todd.
Oh, awesome. Went back to me. I'm sitting here trying to wool gather. That didn't work out for me very well. All right, there was, man, there were a million little things. Did I know a couple weeks back we got to touch on the Vince McMahon retirement. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but that was about as quick and quiet for something at that level, a lot quieter than I thought it was going to be.
I think people are so focused on what Triple H is going to do. I think that's where the direction is going. I don't think it's over yet. I think Vince resigned because, and then there was speculation on Twitter I saw from, I think, WrestleManics about money is not being on the books that might have been paid in these non-disclosure agreements. So I think the next big thing about Vince will take some time to come out. I think it's just speculation right now, but he's obviously resigned, and I think people are just so focused on what Triple H is going to do with WWE because he's kind of like the creative leader right now, with Stephanie and Nick Khan being the corporate chairman.
And they, how do I want to say this? It's not just because something came public and he said, oh, I got to resign. First off, it's not like he ain't had a situation or three that he ain't dealt with along the way. So, I don't know. I feel like he's weathered a lot worse. You stop and think of, you know, the steroid drama and you name it. There's no way I can't see him have not had some sort of plan in the steps anyways. I can see him being a bit flourish, if you will, in the sense of, yeah, I can do another year. I can do another year. I can do another year. Just, you know, keep pushing it. They definitely have the whole show goes on thing to help simplify the transition.
Well, part of the Ric Flair thing was after the retirement match from WWE, he had alimony money, I believe. He had, like, you know, just past marriages that he had and lawyers' fees he had to pay off. So that's why he worked in TNA. And obviously, Jay Lethal had some of his best moments for Ric Flair in TNA. And that's obviously what led to Lethal training Flair before the tag team match was built up recently. But Vince, I don't think he wanted to resign. I think he was kind of just pressured. And I think it was kind of overdue, to be honest with you. I mean, like, he's 76. Like, I don't think he really needs to be in charge of everything at that age, and given his income anyways. So I think it's about time for Triple H to take charge. I think NXT was the brand that Triple H was overseeing, and it was the most favorable of the three, even though it had the least amount of viewers. It was still, like, the most, like, critically received online. And so the main roster has already felt more like Triple H's NXT, given all these returns. You got Karrion Kross showing up on SmackDown. You got Io Shirai on the main roster. You got Dakota Kai making a return to WWE after she had been released. So I think it's already been favorable just in the short amount of time that Triple H has been in charge creatively. So, and I did want to talk about SummerSlam, because that was one of the major events, and that was kind of the show that preceded Ric Flair's last match as well. And I'll get Tony's thoughts on this too, because he saw the card later. First match in the card was Bianca Belair defeating Becky Lynch by pinfall for the women's title. I believe Becky Lynch got injured in this match. That's unfortunate, but it seemed like Becky had turned the face fan favorite after the match. She kind of defended Belair after the match because Bayley had made a return after a year-long absence from injury recovery herself, and it was pretty cool seeing Io Shirai and Dakota Kai as well showing up, and obviously they're kind of like a new group, and it seemed like they were going to go after Bianca, start a fight with her, but Becky Lynch, defended Bianca in the moment, so it was pretty neat seeing Becky fan favorite again, because I think she's more popular as a, as big time backs the man, Becky Lynch. And let's see here. What was the second match? Second match was Logan Paul versus The Miz in the singles match, and you had Maurice and Ciampa with Miz at ringside. What led up to that match was the WrestleMania tag team match, and Miz turning on Logan Paul at WrestleMania. So I was not really interested in this feud at all. I didn't really care, but I think Logan Paul really impressed a lot of people, given his athleticism and his performance in that match. And Ciampa has kind of been like Miz's bodyguard, so to speak. And I thought it was neat that AJ Styles showed up and fought Ciampa to the back. It seemed like Logan Paul might be unofficially affiliated with AJ Styles, given that he was doing AJ Styles' flying forearm from the ropes. Paul got the win on Miz in that match. And the third match on the card was Bobby Lashley versus Austin Theory and for the U.S. title. And Lashley got the win by submission. Austin Theory is currently the Money in the Bank briefcase holder, and I guess he wouldn't need the U.S. title, but I think Theory needs to get some wins at some point, even though Lashley's a good guy to have as a champion. And that was 5 minutes, by the way. And then Mysterio's in the fourth match, Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio had a match against Finn Balor and Damian Priest with Rhea Ripley at ringside, and there it was Judgment Day. The no DQ tag team match, and it seemed like Judgment Day were dominating the Mysterios at one point, and then Edge came out, who used to be the leader of the Judgment Day faction, and he kind of had a very Brood Gangrel type entrance, fire and vampire like entrance. So, and obviously he led, he led to Mysterio's getting the win there. So that was pretty neat. Obviously, I think we all knew the vignettes were for Edge, this Mysterio's vignette, so it made sense for him to come back here. There's a singles match with Pat McAfee versus Happy Corbin, or Baron Corbin, and not surprised McAfee got the win by pin. These two actually used to know each other through football careers prior. I think he played the Colts, so that was the most interesting thing, I think, about the build-up. Not really a huge fan of Corbin as Happy Corbin or Pat McAfee, but Pat McAfee is really impressive, given that he's hasn't been wrestling a long time. He's had some really big matches and good performances, so... sixth match in the card was the Usos versus the Street Profits, Angelo Dawkins, Montez Ford, and the tag team titles, and Jeff Jarrett was the special guest referee. At one point, Jeff Jarrett got super kicked by the Usos, and he got mad about it, but he called the match still, I would say, fairly. So that was kind of neat. I think Jeff Jarrett was just there because it was Nashville, Tennessee, and also having him there kind of promotes his appearance the next night with Ric Flair's last match. So busy weekend for Jeff Jarrett. And then seventh match on the card was Liv Morgan versus Ronda Rousey for the SmackDown Women's title. And controversial finish with Liv Morgan tapping out to, well, Liv Morgan got the win by pinfall to Ronda Rousey, but Ronda, while she was putting a submission on Liv, it seemed like when you watch the replay, obviously they're showing Liv tapping out to Ronda, so, but the official call by the referee was Liv Morgan pinning Rousey, and obviously Ronda was attacking officials after the match. So yeah, that was interesting, to say the least. And it seemed like SmackDown, the audience for SmackDown, has kind of turned on Liv, and they're saying she tapped out. I think, you know, this does not make, does not do any favors for Liv, I believe, having her tap out to Ronda like that. And then obviously, the main event was Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar in the last man standing match for the undisputed WWE Universal title. And Paul Heyman was there with Reigns, and I believe the Usos were there too. And chaotic match. At one point, Brock Lesnar came out with his entrance with a tractor, and he even lifted the ring later in the match. And I've never seen a ring lifted like that. That was crazy. I've set up rings, taken them down, but never seen a ring raised up like that. That was crazy. I've seen rings break, given like super heavyweights, like taking a big bump on the ring, but never seen a ring lifted like that. That was a first. And then Roman Reigns took a big tumble as Brock Lesnar was lifting up the ring. But, obviously, later on, Reigns was able to pin or get the win on Brock, having, like, literally just have so much furniture and stuff buried Brock underneath it on the floor. And 23 minutes, Brock took a lot of punishment, but he just couldn't get up after literally being buried by the floor furniture. And yeah, so I would say good show overall. It's kind of interesting because I think this car was kind of set up before Triple H took charge, but it seemed like an okay event. And SummerSlam's kind of like their one of their biggest shows of the year besides WrestleMania. I wanted to get Tony's thoughts on this because I believe he watched it. Tony, your thoughts on SummerSlam?
Yeah, it was a good card after all. Like, but I would say, like, the two matches I didn't like was Logan Paul and Miz and Ronda and Liv. Like, because to me, like, those matches were kind of boring. Like, the whole time, it was like, because honestly, like, Logan Paul didn't really impress me at all with this match. And, you know, with Liv and Ronda being, for that match to be, like, 4 minutes. And at the ending, like, I don't know. Like, I just didn't like it at all. But one thing is, I was really happy to see both Bayley, Dakota, and EO coming back. Because, you know, like, with Bayley coming back from injury and Dakota coming back from after being released and EO coming back from injury and also making her jump from NXT to the main roster. And, yeah, like, and then see Edge come back and, you know, teaming up with the Mysterios was amazing. And I would say, from when I watched Raw, before SummerSlam, you know, you would have seen Rey Mysterio celebrating 20 years in the WWE. And, you know, that special moment leading up to the match. And what was so cool was that the gift that he got was the same exact costume that he wore at Halloween Havoc against Eddie Guerrero.
Right, 97.
Yep, and that was a special moment. And you see, like, Rhea Ripley coming back, and, you know, you see Aaliyah trying to confront Rhea Ripley. And I was thinking the whole time, like, could this be, like, a tease that we can maybe see Aaliyah in WWE? Because we already see Dominic in WWE, but I do want to ask you guys this. Like, do you guys see Aaliyah maybe, like, you know, in the ring one day?
It's, I wouldn't rule it out, but it just depends if she wants to train, because, I mean, with, I think Mick Foley's daughter, Noelle, tried it, and she got concussed or had other issues, so mm-hmm. I think it really depends and if she can make the time to train, and I think they would take her, because they've used her before with Buddy Murphy. It's kind of like a romance, romantic interest for Buddy Murphy in the past, when Mysterio was feuding with Seth Rollins, so I think they would use her again, but I don't know what else they would do with her other than just have her feud with Judgment Day. It's funny because Mysterio, they went from feuding with Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy and their cult, and now they're feuding with Judgment Day, another like dark cult. But I think that Raw that you're talking about, I actually did watch some of that, and I usually haven't been watching the TV, but I think it was neat seeing Ray kind of celebrate his career and shout out to his friends that kind of helped him along the way, especially from WCW. And then, it just led to Judgment Day beating out the Mysterios. And, I think I wouldn't rule it out, but obviously Rhea Ripley. I don't think Aaliyah is a threat to Rhea Ripley, but given the size and experience of Rhea, but I think I wouldn't rule it out for sure. And what would you say is your favorite match from SummerSlam? I would assume most people's favorite match may have been Last Man Standing, just for that ring raise by Brock earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the Last Man Standing match and the Rollins Championship match was my favorite, because I think those two matches really, like, stood out the whole show. But I will say, though, like, I believe that they shouldn't have made the Women's Championship match the start of the show. Like, because the way that this match was going, I think it should have been, like the co-main event of the night.
Exactly.
But either way, it was a great, amazing match. And the Last Man Standing match, we were seeing so many things going on here. Like, we were seeing, like, the Usos getting involved, and Theory trying to cash in, and Brock Lesnar
reviving
Paul Heyman to be announced at the table. Like, we were seeing so many things in this match. And knowing that this will be the last time that both Roman and Brock is going to face each other for the final time, like, that, this match really, like, made an amazing ending to this rivalry. And I know, like, there is a rumor going around saying that, oh, Brock Lesnar is retiring. And, I mean, you never know. I mean, he could still be wrestling, or he could not be wrestling.
I don't.
We hear that he's not going to wrestle.
Yeah, I don't think he's retiring. I've already heard that he's scheduled for probably, like, winter dates. So it wouldn't surprise me if he shows up at the Royal Rumble or around that time leading up to it. My thing is, I want to see, if he's coming back, I want him versus Bobby Lashley, because they did it once, and I don't think we got the best finish, if I believe, but I think there's other opponents you could have at Brock, and that was, they've obviously done Reigns, Brock too many times already, like four, so I think people, when they saw that match, like, kind of being teased or rumored and announced, I think we all had low expectations because, like, we just weren't impressed with the other two matches after WrestleMania 31, but they obviously, like, had a really good showing in that SummerSlam match last weekend. Glad I could get your thoughts on that. And I did want to ask you, what was the recent theater work you did, Tony? I think if you're still on. I think his call ended. But Tony, if you don't mind, like, call in if you want to get any plugs or more comments in. But Todd, what are your thoughts on some of this discussion we had earlier about SummerSlam?
I'm with you. I almost wanted to ask when you mentioned, hey, there won't be any more Brock Reigns. I'm going to hold your breath on that. Boy, I felt like they pushed that as long and hard as they could.
I think that's the main problem with the previous regime, but it's just the fact that there's so many rematches. That's why I don't watch the TV as much, because it's like, why am I going to watch the same match, like, multiple times? And it's, like, not going to be the best match, you know, that they can have. Nakamura.
That's some of it. I don't know. You would think, how do you say, you don't tell me that much talent in the house and only one dude can be a number one contender. You got a bunch of folks that are definitely in there viable. You would think that, you know, they would more battles to be number one contender or, you know, just to kind of give us a little more.
It's a weird time.
That's part of it.
It's an interesting transitional time because Roman Reigns was, like, champion with two belts recently, and he's kind of been more part-time as Brock, but, like, he's kind of been a part-time top champion, and, like, at least he defended it on the pay-per-views, but I think what they're going to do is have Drew challenge Roman for one title, and I don't know if Drew will beat him, but he could. And if he doesn't, then Killer Cross will probably fight Roman for one of the other titles and probably defeat him for one of those titles. And Killer Cross just, you know, came back from the Indies and come back as Karrion Kross, and he seemed to beat up Drew McIntyre and make it known that he was going to challenge Reigns at some point. So, I'd like to see Cross versus Reigns when that happens. I know Cross isn't everyone's favorite, but I think he has a lot of potential, and I think Triple H sees it too. But I guess we'll see if Reigns will hold on to both belts much longer, because he's kind of been undefeated for a long time. I thought for sure he would have been pinned at some point in a non-title match, but... Like,
yeah, because there used to strong. Be, I don't feel like there's as much of that kind of stuff going on. There would be, oh, heck, if nothing else, there used to be a bunch of, you know, they would throw in, you know, Larry Curley or Mo at a shop, at a title at some, you know, old school Monday night show or whatever it was against Hulkster, and, you know, even if it was somebody that they were trying to build up that wasn't there, maybe somebody on their way down and they wanted to do it, you know, if nothing else, the champ would get a loss due to disqualification. You just don't even see that kind of stuff anymore to speak of, right? That's just that side of things. I know we're, oh, crap, we're down to 5 minutes anyway. Any sign of
Repeat that question again.
Oh, I was just saying there were, you know, there used to be a ton of side matches, if you will. And you had already touched on the part-time-ishness. But there would be a ton of side matches with whomever. And you know what? The champ would have some losses. They might be disqualifications. Right? Like, classic forever, somebody brought a weapon in the ring, they'd lose a weapon, and he, of course the champ would get caught with the weapon. You know, that kind of stuff. So they get disqualified. But they wouldn't lose the title over,
Todd,
so they would still be the champ.
Todd, excuse me, you're talking about the foreign object, right?
Yeah.
Well,
not the weapon, well, but the foreign object. Yeah.
Foreign object.
Well, with it being a pay-per-view and it being a blow-off match, it made sense for them to do a no DQ last man standing match. So,
I get that, but yeah. I mean, all the stuff in between. We're talking about watching TV and stuff. There's nothing built up in between. You know, no way for it to come back to that. No other level of intrigue.
I honestly couldn't tell you because I don't watch TV as much. If I see somebody I like, I'll watch a clip of that. I think the Mysterios and Judgment Day had the best story. I think because just the family versus the cult, and obviously Edge being turned down by Judgment Day, which I didn't like, but at least it played into the Mysterios versus Judgment Day like match with SummerSlam. So I'd say they can do storytelling in some feuds and in others. It's just a repeat of the same old. But we're running out of time, so I wanted to get Todd and John's comments or thoughts as we wrap up.
Todd, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I guess at this point down the plug, take care of yourselves, take care of one another, take care of your families. Be safe out there. Big hugs.
I want to thank Tony for calling in. I think he was having issues calling back in, but John, we'll try to fix that next time. But
that's right.
Really appreciate Tony calling in and kind of filling in the details. And I think he was doing some theater work, and he was doing the Ann's family. I'll have to ask him about that.
If he was talking about musical theater, got to ask, has he ever done Rocky Horror? Just saying.
Well, not to no-sell that, but we're desperately out of time. John, do you have any plugs or comments as we wrap up?
Yes, I do. I will say this, and this is the last time that I will say anything about Ric Flair for quite a while. But, you know, as Tony said, we're talking about Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar's last time. Well, we will always have superstars like Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar's. But before we had dark matches, we had troopers that went to Billings, Montana, Conway, South Carolina, Kalamazoo, Michigan, and Oxford, Mississippi, and I want to thank Ric Flair. There will never be another Ric Flair, and I want to thank Ric for everything he has done he was when they asked me in the seventh grade, who is your hero? And I wrote down Ric Flair. And my guidance counselor said, who is that? And I had to explain to her in the seventh grade who Ric Flair was. And she said, that's ridiculous. And I said, no. And tonight I will say to my guidance counselor in the seventh grade, you were wrong and Ric Flair was right. So thanks a lot, Ric Flair, for everything that you have done for all the Dr. John Stamies and all your fans throughout the world, throughout the times, throughout everything. So thank you, Ric Flair. And thanks, Todd. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Tony. Thanks to all of you for being here with us. And we hope that our man is back with us next week, the Amazing Velvet. But I'll tell you what, it's great being here. There's nothing better than pro wrestling interviews on Sunday night at 7:30. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Cheers. Everybody say goodbye.
Night.
Night all. Big hugs.
Bye-bye.
Where's that compound British lady?
I don't know. She's probably crazy.